Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Welcome to the show today. I'm so excited to bring back a special guest, Megan Kane from the Creative Vegetable Gardener. We've been talking back and forth, and I told her that I had a listener ask me a question about what to plant in the fall, when to plant it, some questions about fall crops, and Megan said she could talk about that. And also, she has a great challenge that she had sent out, also was what made me reach out to her too, and said, let's share your challenge with my listeners too. So I think you're going to like that. So welcome back, Megan.
Thanks, Jackie. I'm happy to be back.
Well, we're excited to have you. So go ahead and tell us about the challenge.
Sure. So I have a challenge coming up. It's going to start on Sunday, August 23rd, and it's 7 day. It's free for anybody to sign up, and it's called Make Your Garden Harvest Last All Year. So I wanted to get people psyched up for the at least if you live in Wisconsin and a lot of the northern states and a lot of places around the U.S., September is like the height of the harvest season. And it's actually one of my favorite times of the harvest season because I feel like it's the intersection of a lot of the summer crops are still really coming in strong, but then a lot of the fall crops are also starting to come in. So there's so much food everywhere. And September usually for me is the month that I do the most food preserving. So I wanted to get people thinking about what they want to preserve, make some priorities, come up with a plan, and also get really excited about heading into the food preserving. So it's for people who have never done any food preserving before, or it's for people who have some experience but want to delve into it a little deeper. It's going to be a 7-day email challenge, so you'll get an email a day for 7 days, but we're also going to have a lot of activity over on the Facebook page where we'll have some giveaways and we'll have people sharing kind of what they're coming up with through the challenge and ideas and resources and things like that. So I'm trying to make it into kind of a community event because I think a lot of times food preserving is kind of solitary. We're all in our kitchens by ourselves, and unless you invite a whole bunch of friends over, you do a lot of food preserving yourself. So I thought we could make a virtual community of food preservers.
Awesome. Well, you got me excited already. And right. I know my husband's already got, like I was telling you in the pre-interview, he just washed a whole bunch of quart jars and pint jars, and they're glistening on the counter. And we picked cucumbers and green beans this morning. So he's going to make some pickles and some green beans soon. And
Cool.
So go ahead.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Tell us a little more, I guess, about kind of things people might, I guess, be thinking about harvesting or looking for. One of the other things I know you talk a lot about is getting things at your local farmer's market or different places.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of canning. So I actually just put out a blog post last week that said why I hate canning. And so I don't do a lot of canning. I really focus on, and this is what the challenge will focus on and what my book focuses on, which is what I call super easy food preserving. So I use my fridge and my freezer, and I also store a lot of things in my basement. I don't have a fancy root cellar or anything like that. I just store things in, I've had a couple different houses and have stored things in the house fresh. So I really like to do food preserving in little snippets, like little 45-minute snippets, instead of devoting a whole Saturday or Sunday to it, because we're pretty busy. And I also like to have time to enjoy the summer weekends. We always have a lot of family visiting and festivals, and we live in a pretty fun town. So there's lots of stuff going on. So I like to do it in snippets, and I like to do the quickest and easiest way to put each vegetable, fruit, and herb away. And so I will be talking about a lot of that stuff. And I also kind of wait until September. I've done a little bit there's certain things that come and go, like strawberries and blueberries and raspberries and cherries that I make sure that I freeze. But other than that, I haven't done a ton because I prefer to just focus on it at the end of the summer and the beginning of the fall so that I don't drag it all out. And also, you know, things only last a certain amount of time in storage. So I like to kind of push it back to the end of the season so that I have kind of higher quality stuff that's going to sit in the freezer or the fridge for the whole winter. So I don't really do a lot of preserving in spring because I feel like I'm not going to really eat it until the fall or the winter anyway.
Oh, that's interesting. Good point. Okay. All right. Well, so if people, do they need to like gather materials or anything like that?
No, you don't need anything for the challenge. You can go over and sign up at creativevegetablegardener.com/challenge, and you can put your email in on that page. And then on the 23rd, you'll get your first email. And what we're going to start out with is figuring out your priorities for the food preserving season. So that's going to be different for everybody, because I really like to make sure and stress to people that you should really preserve what you eat, which seems common sense, but I think any of us who are gardeners and or food preservers have grown and preserved things that we ended up not eating. I've certainly done that myself. I don't usually grow chard because I really like kale instead, but I love how chard looks. So a couple of years ago, I planted chard again in my garden after several years of not doing so. And at the end of the season, I realized I had only harvested it one time. Oh, so I thought, well, that's fine if I want to just grow it for the aesthetics because it's really beautiful. It's almost like a flower in a way, mm-hmm. and ornamental. But so we all grow things that we don't end up necessarily eating, and those are always good lessons. And I think food preserving is the same thing. I froze cauliflower one year and we never touched it. It just sat at the bottom of the freezer, and the year came around and I just composted it. So I thought, okay, obviously we don't eat cauliflower. Sometimes beans are the same way. I just froze beans and I still have a few left from last year. So I thought, well, I don't know if I should freeze beans or not this upcoming year because we didn't really use them. And so the first part of it's really going to be looking at your meals and your eating habits and what you buy from the grocery store and kind of deconstructing some of those meals and trying to figure out, are there some of those things that you can preserve so that you have on hand throughout the year? So, for example, one of the examples I use from my own eating habits at our house is that we eat a lot of rice and beans, especially in the winter. It's kind of a quick and easy dish. It's healthy. It gives you lots of leftovers for lunches all week. And so we put away each year some of those ingredients. I store garlic and onions in my basement, and then we freeze peppers and corn. And then sometimes we'll freeze some tomatoes, and then we also can salsa. And so that's one of the ways that we're going to start, is kind of having people look at their eating habits and their shopping habits and see if they can figure out and pick some of those things off the list then that they can preserve for the winter. Because it's pretty awesome. At our house, we really buy very little produce during the winter. We're spending the whole winter. I go to the farmer's market a couple times because we have a winter's market that's really good until Christmas. And then after that, it's not so great. There's not much fresh food left in Wisconsin. So we spend a lot of the winter just eating everything that we've put away. I go to the grocery store, but I usually bypass the produce aisle unless there's really something very specific that I need for a recipe. So just trying to help folks save some money in the winter, because often the produce is really expensive because it's coming from much further away than it is at this time of year. And a lot of times it doesn't taste as good because it's also traveling halfway around the world. So often getting picked when it's not quite ripe, and then you get it and it doesn't really look that great, doesn't taste that great. Where right now everything is super tasty and it's the height of the harvest season. So it's a great time to get some food, either grow it yourself or buy some from the farmer's market or get it from your CSA and start to put it away for winter use.
Awesome. That's why I think people love your episode so much, because you're so strategic and you're so into, conserving energy and just doing things that are easy.
Yes.
Successful, easy, fun to enjoy. Like, that's so important, the part about, you know, that food is fresh now. And so this is a good time to do that kind of work so that you have it during the winter. That's amazing that you don't hardly have to buy any produce in the winter.
Yeah, it's great. And we cook a lot at home. So we don't, we cook during the weeknight. Sometimes on the weekends we'll go out one night, but we pretty much cook every night. And so we're going through a lot of food in the winter. We don't go out for lunches for work. And so we're basically eating dinner and lunch from all of our preserved food. And then we just buy the staples like beans and rice and lentils and things like that. And of course we have to buy we eat a little bit of dairy and things like that. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. And what I try to convey to people is that it's such an amazing feeling on a January night when you're ready to cook dinner. For me, I go into my basement and I pick out a bunch of ingredients from my storage or from the freezer, and then I come up with a whole handful of things, and then I just make dinner. And it's from my garden in the summer. And I think there's quite a feeling behind that. It's just, I don't know, it's like
a feeling of empowerment.
Yeah, it's definitely a feeling of empowerment and self-sufficiency, and it makes me think about my garden from the year before, and I can kind of imagine the plants that the food came from. And it's the way to, I think, really maximize your garden. So my garden is still paying me back. If you look outside my house in the middle of January, my entire garden is covered in often a foot of snow. So there's not much happening, but I'm still eating food that came from my garden that previous year. And so we all know that gardening is a lot of work. It's a lot of joyful work, but I think preserving food in an easy way that doesn't take up a lot of extra time is a great way to have your garden keep paying you back throughout the whole winter off season. Which, for folks that live in Montana and Wisconsin like us, it can be a really long season.
That's so true. There's nothing like opening, to me, like a can of pickled beets or, you know, a jar of Mike cans a lot of carrots and green beans and just, you know, getting that fresh flavor in the middle. Like, I don't ever buy tomatoes. I haven't put tomatoes on my salads in the winter in years because I just use pickled beets because that's the red for me, and it works just as good, and it's kind of a little different flavor, but I can't hardly eat a tomato from the store anymore.
Oh, gosh. No, I don't either. We never buy tomatoes. And actually, we never buy tomato products anymore either because we freeze so much tomato product that any time a recipe calls for canned tomatoes or chopped tomatoes or whatever all the different options are, I just de-thaw a container of tomatoes from my freezer and just dump it into the recipe. So yeah, we not only am I not buying fresh tomatoes, I'm never buying any tomato products either. And it's been years since I bought a can or a jar of tomatoes.
The other thing I was going to say is that, you know, a lot of people make the excuse, it's, you know, processed food is so much easier. It's so much faster. It's so much quicker to just, you know, whip up a box of macaroni and cheese or this or that thing. And so this is just as simple as, you know, buying processed food, preparing easy meals, but they're healthy and they're nutritious. You've grown them yourself. They're going to taste 100 times better. And if you've done that little bit of prep work, and I remember when we talked about the peppers, like, you know, you just made it so easy and so simple and just things that I had never thought of. And then here's these great tips and I've been using them. And I think that, you know, that's part of the secret, that just because you're making it homemade doesn't mean it has to be a long, arduous procedure. Because we all do have busy lives.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, one of my blog posts that's going to come out next week that I've already written kind of talks about that. So last fall, I'm not always able to grow, or I don't have the room to grow all the broccoli that I like to freeze. And so I went to the farmer's market sometime in September. One of the vendors was selling just the side shoots of the broccoli. So lots of little broccoli florets, which is great because they're basically already the size that you would chop them down into. I bought a huge bag. I think I bought I think it was like $1 a pound. So I bought like 12 pounds for $12. Came home with a huge bag. I didn't even really need to chop it because it was already chopped into basically bite-sized pieces. I usually steam my broccoli. So I steamed it very lightly. I kind of dried it off, and then I packed it into a bunch of quart bags. And that was basically pretty much all the broccoli that we ate for the entire winter. And so instead of going to the grocery store multiple times or every week or every other week, you're getting a bunch of broccoli, and then you're cutting it down, and then you're cooking it and then using it in your recipe. I just, like you said, I agree definitely that a lot of times in the winter, if you've already done the work, I'm a lot of times just reaching into different bags and throwing in some broccoli, throwing in some corn, throwing in some peppers, chopping some onions really quick so that it is almost like instant food. Sometimes in the winter, I feel like I'm assembling more than I am really doing a lot of chopping and preparation.
What I do is put them in those like Ziploc, the sandwich containers. And I like to be able to just, you know, grab a few handfuls, like if I'm making a pizza or something and just throw, I like to have cooked broccoli on my pizza, or if I'm making an omelet, just grab a handful. I mean, broccoli is my go-to food, so it goes in just about everything. And having that frozen broccoli, it's already pre-cooked. You can put it in anything.
Right. That's we use it for all kinds of different things. And I think one thing that's natural for a lot of us that live in cold winter climates is that we eat a lot more cooked food in the winter anyway. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sometimes I feel like people say, well, that means you're eating less fresh food. And I think, well, a lot of times when you're buying broccoli from the store, fresh broccoli in February, you're most likely cooking it anyway, because we really crave a lot of those more hearty cooked foods in the winter. Mm-hmm. This time of year, yeah, we're sitting down to lots of fresh salads and light foods because it's summer, but we're cooking a lot of the stuff in the winter anyway. So for me, it doesn't really matter as much that things are already partially cooked, because I'm going to just put them in a soup or a stew or a casserole or a stir fry anyway.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Anything else to say about the challenge or the book?
I don't think so. It's going to be really fun. And I'm really excited to help people get psyched for the food preserving season and kind of hopefully inspire some folks to take on a little bit more food preserving in September and the beginning of October, so that they can reap the benefits all winter long.
Perfect. All right. Now, did you have some tips for my listener who was asking me about fall harvest and what you can plant in the fall? Is this the time to do it? Is it right now in the middle of August?
Yeah. So it depends what you want to grow. So I've had great success with a fall garden. Definitely depends where you live and what your season's like. For me in Wisconsin, we generally have our first frost around the first week in October. There's tons of things that are frost hardy. And so I often have things in my garden until Thanksgiving, because usually here Thanksgiving is when sometimes we get our first big snowfall. Sometimes it's really getting down to around 20 degrees by then. I've had great success. So you can have a whole nother season in your garden, which is the fall season, even if you have a short fall like I do in Wisconsin. So some things it's too late for. So it's a little bit hard sometimes to think about the fall garden, because you really have to be thinking about it in June and July for some of those things that take longer. So I started some broccoli seedlings in June, probably the third week of June, and then I transplanted them into my garden, and I did it a little bit late, probably July 20th. And so they're growing now. So if for things that take quite a while, like broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower would be hard to plant this time of year. It's a little too late. So for next year, you should be thinking about those things in June.
Okay.
But for all the shorter things, and let's say carrots also, needed to already be planted. I actually planted some about 3 weeks ago, and they still have not germinated, and I've been watering them every day. So sometimes it's hard to get carrots to germinate in the middle of the summer because it's so dry. We've even gotten a little bit of rain, and I'm still having problems. But carrots and beets is another thing that you can plant around the end of June to mid-July so that you'll get a whole nother crop if you have room. So what I do in my garden a lot is in July, I have lots of space opening up because my garlic and onions are coming out of my garden, and I grow a lot of those things. So sometimes I'm replacing those areas with some new crops. But for August, one of my most favorite things to plant for a fall crop is spinach. So that's one of my favorite vegetables. I could eat a spinach salad pretty much every day of the year. I don't, because this time of year there isn't really much spinach, but the rest of the year. So what I do is plant it. I just cleared out my last onion bed today. I'm a little bit behind. And I just thought, I wonder if it's too early to plant spinach. But I actually looked at my records from last year. I have a map of my garden, and I planted two rows of Thai spinach on August 12th. So that's tomorrow. So it's not too early. I think I'm going to get out there tomorrow and plant some spinach. And then I planted another two rows on August 21st. And so those things will germinate. Spinach doesn't love hot weather. And so sometimes I'm worried if it's a little too hot here that it's not going to germinate. But I don't think I had any problems last year. So certainly right around this time, in the next couple of weeks, you can plant spinach. It'll grow. It loves the cool weather of fall. It'll grow all fall. You can harvest it. I have harvested it around Thanksgiving and even around Christmas, depending on the weather here. So what one thing to know about fall garden is that with the diminishing light, so the days are shortening, which means plant growth is slowing down. And so you need to build in potentially some extra time. And so say, I mean, that's one of the problems with carrots. So carrots, say you get, or let's say beets is usually like 58 or 63 days, depending on what variety you have. So that's 2 months. You might think, oh, well, it's August 11th to September 11th to October 11th. Well, that should give him enough time to get beets. They're frost hardy. They can survive in my garden, but they really slow down. And so they might not have time to get to full maturity because of plant growth is slowing down. And so going back to spinach, you plant spinach, you can harvest it throughout the fall. It's going to get to a point where it's not growing anymore. It depends on where you live in the U.S. For me, I think it's definitely nothing's growing in December and January. And so I'm just harvesting. And spinach is really frost hardy. But what I usually do is harvest most of it somewhere between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And then I'll mulch the bed just to protect it right over everything, right over all the spinach to protect it from some of the winter winds. There's a lot, it gets really dry in the winter and a lot of it is the wind. Mm-hmm. And so I'll put some mulch over it, and then right about March here, things are starting to thaw out. I can tell that the days are longer. I'll take the mulch off the bed and the spinach will start growing again. So I've gone out in the first week in April, second week in April, and harvested huge bowls of spinach from the previous year's crop. Nice. And so I think that is a great way to experiment. That would be a good first crop to experiment with for a fall garden, especially if you live in an area, Wisconsin's pretty cold. I'm zone 5, kind of between 5A and 5B, and spinach survives the winter. And I've not mulched it in the past because I forgot or got too busy, and it survived fine. And then it will bolt a little bit quicker in the spring, and so I always plant my spring spinach I'll plant, and then I'll have a nice long season of spinach in the spring. So that's one to start with. I'm also looking at my maps to see what else did I plant There's a lot of quick green, so you could plant arugula. I actually have way better luck with arugula in the fall than I do in the spring because it really doesn't like heat. And so mine always seems to bolt pretty quickly in the spring.
Yeah, mine does too.
Yeah, so I have so it's not super frost hardy, but sometimes I'll cover it with some row cover to get it going, keep it going past my first frosts. I planted joy choy, which is a bok choy, and I just kept it like a baby bok choy. I planted, yeah, spinach. Last year, actually, in the summer, I planted, I'm trying to see if I have, oh yeah, right, that's right August 12th. I direct seeded scallions right into my garden bed. They didn't really come to maturity that well in the fall, but then this spring they regrew, and so I actually still have some. They're not as tasty anymore. They've gotten kind of tough, but we're still kind of using them if we need them. Mm-hmm. So this is a year later, basically to the day from when I direct seeded scallions, and I still have them in my garden and we're still using them. Like I said, they're not the greatest because they've already flowered, so they're not as tasty as they are when they're young. So that would be another thing that you could try. You'll might get a little bit this fall, but you'll definitely get them again next spring. I'm looking at my map again just to see what else I planted. So yeah, for me in the next few weeks, oh, you could do radishes. So I'm going to do some radishes, some arugula, some baby bok choy, tatsoi is a nice one that really likes the cool weather. I'll probably do another row of scallions, really looking towards next spring. And then anything else that you grow that short amount of time, lettuce, salad mix, anything
that's so what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, those are all great. Anything that you look at the days to harvest and it's, you know, a lot of those greens and the radishes, they can be less than 30 days. Oh, you can get radishes in as little as 21 days. So anything that's a low amount of days. So that's a good guideline. If you look at, I didn't have the best luck with beets last year because it's 2 months from when I planted them and because things slow down, they got okay, they didn't get super big. And actually now look, the one more other thing is turnips.
Oh really?
Fall turnips are so good, and I really like Hakurai, which I think I got from Johnny's. That's my favorite variety. My map says I planted them on August 21st. And they're pretty quick growing, and I actually harvested turnips spinach and some of my greens on Christmas morning because I was having guests and I really wanted to have a salad from my garden. Now turnips won't survive. Yeah, turnips are slightly frost hardy, but they won't really survive those really hard frosts. But what I did, and if folks are subscribed to my blog, I'll be talking about it again this fall and winter. I built a little greenhouse hoop over one of my garden beds last fall. And so I was able to do pretty well and keep things pretty well protected until about Christmas. And then actually Christmas morning, well, I was so excited because I hadn't been in my hoop for a couple weeks. It was pretty snowy and cold by then. Had a bunch of family coming over. I thought, oh, I can't wait to go out and harvest a bunch of stuff for a salad. And I opened my hoops and something, probably a chipmunk or a vole or something like that, had gotten into my hoops and basically just destroyed the entire hoop, ate like a lot of the turnips and ate a lot of the spinach. So it was a bummer. I did end up getting enough for a salad. We just washed everything really well. And then I ended up taking the hoops off. I'm going to do another experiment this year, but certainly there's lots of stuff without protection you can still grow in the fall. There's still time. Depending on where you live, you probably have a lot of time to still plant things. So I live in a pretty northern climate. I have less time. If you live in a zone that's warmer than mine, you have even more time than I do to plant lots and lots of things for fall harvest, especially lots of salad. So get out there, and if you have any empty spaces in your garden, figure out what you want to eat this fall and order some seeds and get planting.
Perfect. So Megan also said that she was going to donate a copy of Super Easy Food Preserving, her book, to one of the listeners for today's show. So do you want to tell them how that's going to work?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. So what we decided is that folks can go to the show notes page on your website, which is episode 70, and leave a comment on that page telling us what you're most excited to preserve this food preserving season. And then Jackie will randomly pick one of the comments, and then I'll mail you out a hard copy of the book straight to your house.
And the deadline's going to be, let's do it Sunday, just like your challenge. August 23rd.
Okay, August 23rd. So leave your comment by August 23rd, and if you're picked, you'll get a free copy of the book.
That is excellent. Okay, so I want to encourage everybody to go to Megan's website, thecreativevegetablegardener.com, right?
Yes, yep. And if you want to sign up for the challenge, it's creativevegetablegardener.com/challenge. And then I also have on my main homepage is my regular mailing list. And if you sign up for that, you'll get 5 emails right away with the 5 mistakes to avoid in your garden right now. And then after that, you'll just get about 1 a week of my regular weekly blog post.
And then if you're interested, her super easy food preserving book is just like her website and just like Megan, it's strategic. It's written just in this really easy to read. I don't know. The graphic designer in me saw this book and was just totally in love because it's laid out so nicely. It's easy to follow the instructions, the way it's organized in alphabetical order. There's beautiful pictures. There's diagrams and worksheets you can fill in. And just you can't go wrong with this great book. And you can write an e-version, or there's the I had to have the hard copy because even though I'm the tech girl, I like hard copies of books. I don't really like reading things on my Kindle or on my computer.
Yeah, I do too, especially for those of us who spend a lot of time. Well, I spend a lot of time in the garden, but I also spend a lot of time on the computer for my business. And so, yeah, it's nice to sit down with a hard copy. But you have your option. You can get an e-book, you can get a print book, or I also have a bundle and you can get both if you want.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming back on and sharing your expertise again. And
my pleasure. My pleasure. I think what we figured out today is that there's still lots to do for the rest of the gardening season. And a lot of it's the fun stuff. So food preserving and then planting some fall crops.
Cool. Thanks, Megan. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks.
So listeners, I am very excited at the Kalispell Farmers Market. I ran into this wonderful farmer, Mandy, who I bought the most delicious cauliflower from. It was just melting your mouth, so soft, so fresh. I haven't eaten anything like that cauliflower in so long. And her and her husband have this sweet little farm called the Lower Valley Farm in Kalispell, right?
That's correct.
And so her husband, Jay, is here today to tell us, because they are having a farm tour on Thursday, which is the day this episode's going to air. So it's going to be tonight. And I said, come on the show and tell everybody in case they want to come to the farm tour. I'm going to be there. I'm very excited to check out their farm and go on the tour. So, Jay, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Go ahead and tell us a little more.
Well, my wife and I run a small family diversified farm here between Summers and Kalispell, just south of Kalispell. We do market vegetables and we do intensively managed livestock. And so our farm tour is going to be really two parts. Mandy's going to give a tour of our market gardens and talk about all the different ways that we manage our gardens and our soil and our commitment to the soil health and all the wonderful things that are happening in the garden. And then I will give a tour of our unique livestock program, which is really exciting. We're really excited to be able to share our vision for what we want with our farm, with the way that we're growing food, what Mandy's doing in the market gardens and what we're doing out here with the livestock. It's really exciting, and it's unique, and it's healing the land, and it's producing incredibly nourishing food, and we're just really thankful to have this opportunity to share that vision.
Mm-hmm. And educate others about how they can do it too, right?
Oh, yeah. We want everybody to be growing food. That's so interesting that you mentioned that, is that I would guess most small farmers, but certainly Mandy and I, we want more people growing their own food. We want more people excited about food that's local, that's nourishing, that restores the land, that brings health to our community.
There you go. There's that passion I was looking for, I heard earlier. Okay. All right, so you have to tell us a little more. What time does it start?
Great. So our farm tour is going to start at 6:30, and it's free, open to the public. The market garden portion of the tour will be first, and then we expect that to take about 45 minutes, and then we're going to spend about 45 minutes at the livestock. So it's about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours.
Okay. What kind of livestock? Like chickens, cows, pigs, mm-hmm. goats?
Right. So we have 60 acres in perennial pastures. And we, I run a FLIRD, which is a flock herd. I have Katahdin sheep, and we have steers. So those are the things that we have for sale. We also have some other livestock around that we keep for our family. We do... we have a dairy cow, and then I've got chickens for us. We have a couple of pigs just for our family. But the part of our operation that's sort of on the business end is the sheep and the steers.
Okay, excellent. Anything else you want to tell us? How do we get there? How do they find it?
How do you get here? Okay, so. I would recommend Googling us. Our address is 1375 North Summers Road in Kalispell, Montana, 59901. That's our street address. Directions. Also, people could call us. Our number is 406-471-9538. Our phone number is 406-471-9538. And we'll be giving directions and things like that.
Okay.
Sure you don't want to Unless you want me to give a quick blurb on how to get here. Okay. To get here, if you're heading south from Kalispell, you take the Lower Valley Road, and that's at a very strange intersection just south of the Toyota dealership. There's a gas station there, and you turn and kind of take a strange right onto Lower Valley Road. But once you're on Lower Valley Road, it's pretty straightforward. You follow that until you come to a place in the road where when you go straight, you're on North Summers Road. If you turn left, then you're continuing on Lower Valley Road. If you go past the Pink Pig at Lower Valley Processing, you've gone too far. What you want to do is go straight at that intersection. And there's an old swaleback potato barn there that you just pretty much can't miss on your left. It's a beautiful building. And we are the next thing on your left after you go past that intersection.
Okay.
And you'll see it at that point. There'll be cars and signs, and we live in a yurt and can't miss it.
Live in a yurt. Well, that's exciting right
we
there.
Do.
Cool.
We do.
All right. Sounds good. So everybody come out and check out the farm tour at the Lower Valley Farm on Thursday night at 6:30 p.m.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at awesomemontana.com. That's just AWESOMEMONTANA.com, like awesome Montana, all spelled out. And click on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener Podcast, and it will link right to the show notes and all the things we've talked about on today's show. Thanks again for listening, and grow local.